Welcome. Please accept Jim and John's invitation to join them as they once again ask, what do you think about... Hey, everyone. What do you think about elevators? You probably spend very little time thinking about them, right? For someone as lazy as I, they come in pretty handy. But I really don't care to take a long ride in one. It seems to mess with my semicircular canals or something or whatever. I feel lightheaded sometimes when I get out. Probably psychosomatic. And I sure as hell don't ride in an elevator that's on the outside of a building. No thank you. Did you know that elevators have been around for quite a long time? Everyone bitches about how lazy we are today, but it's thought that Archimedes created a crude elevator back in 236 BCE. And in ancient Rome, elevators were used in the Colosseum to lift gladiators and wild animals up into the playing field. Probably because no one wanted to risk getting near those fighting bastards. In 1743, Louis XV had what was referred to as a flying chair built to allow one of his mistresses to access her quarters on the third floor of the Palace of Versailles without walking through the main building and up the main stairways. Similarly, a flying table was built in his Chateau de Choisy. This elevator dinner table combination allowed the king and his private guests to dine without intrusion from the lowly servants. At the sound of a bell, a table would rise from the kitchen below and up into the dining room, complete with an elaborate meal, including all of the necessary accoutrements. By the mid-19th century, elevators powered by steam or by water were available for sale, but the ropes they relied on could be worn out or destroyed fairly easily, and they were not generally trusted for passenger travel. However, in 1852, Elijah Graves Otis invented a safety brake that revolutionized the vertical transport industry. And I bet you're thinking, where does this start to get interesting, right? Well, it doesn't. It's the history of the freaking elevator, for crying out loud. Nobody cares about that. Hell, the escalator people wish that the elevator had never even been invented. But some weird things have happened in and around elevators. And we're going to talk about one. No, make that two specific incidents of weirdness involving elevators. My first story is this strange little tale that I first came across in a book that my brother had ordered from a school book sale. I don't know if they still do that, but every so often they would hand out these little newspaper print magazines of books kids could order. They were pretty cool. I got quite a few. But anyway, this book that my brother got was called Strange But True, 22 Amazing Stories. It was written by a guy named Donald J. Sobel, who was, by the way, the creator of Encyclopedia Brown, another one of my favorite childhood reads, which also happened to be introduced to me by my brother. The story concerns the experiences of one Frederick Hamilton Temple Blackwood, first Marquess of Dufferin and Ava. I personally wasn't interested enough in the man himself to do a deep dive into his biography. I'm more interested in his alleged brushes with the paranormal. But here's a little poop about the guy that I picked up from Wikipedia. He was born on June 21st, 1826, and he died on February 12th, 1902. Evidently, as a young man, he was a favorite in the court of Queen Victoria. He is best known for his service as a British diplomat. He began his public service tenure in 1860, serving as a commissioner to Syria, after which he played the dual roles of Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster and the Undersecretary of State for War. In 1872, he became the Governor General of Canada. And then, in 1884, he climaxed, serving as Viceroy of India. Unable to top that, He retired in 1896. So, the reason I gave these facts and dates and figures out there are just so you know that this is a real historical figure. I mean, you can further pursue his bona fides on your own time if you desire, but I just wanted you to know that this was a real guy with a real story that he told. That leads us into the aspect of this man that interests me. In 1849, during an overnight sojourn at the home of an Irish friend, Lord Dufferin found himself unable to set sail into the seas of slumber. As he awaited Morpheus's balm, Lord Dufferin heard a carriage pull up the drive leading to the house. Wondering whom this late-night visitor might be, he arose and went to the window to investigate, gazing out into the night. The carriage, it appeared, was a hearse, and it had stopped in front of the house in which he was staying. Then, from out in the estate grounds, he thought he heard a moaning. Listening closely, he heard the groans yet again. As a matter of fact, it was now louder and seemingly closer to the house. Peering into the dark, he discerned a man-like shape staggering across the lawn, bearing a large, oblong crate upon its shoulders and back. Intrigued, Lord Dufferin dashed from his room and out through the front door into the chilly night to confront the trespasser. When he came up on the laboring stranger, Dufferin realized that the man was carrying a casket. Not to be put off, Dufferin demanded of the other his business and his identity. The trespasser lifted his face, revealing a hideous countenance, but did not respond further. Lord Dufferin stepped toward the man, and the stranger, along with his eerie burden, disappeared. Confused, and, quite frankly, probably terrified, Lord Dufferin returned to his room, where he sat down at a desk and quickly wrote out an account of his strange encounter. Years later, in 1891, Lord Dufferin was named the English ambassador to France. In Paris, he attended a reception at the Grand Hotel. While awaiting an elevator in the lobby, Lord Dufferin again encountered the strange, disappearing trespasser. As the elevator arrived at the lobby floor and the doors slid open, Lord Dufferin found himself face to face with the ugly stranger. This time, rather than carrying a coffin, the man was acting as the elevator operator. Taken aback, Lord Dufferin stepped aside, allowing the others awaiting the transport to enter. Lord Dufferin himself decided to hurry off to the hotel manager in an attempt to learn the name of the odd man. Before he reached the manager's office, however, a resounding crash exploded behind him. The elevator cable had broken, plunging the elevator and its passengers to its destruction. Everyone aboard perished, including the operator. No one, it seemed, knew the identity of the elevator operator, as he had only started his employment that very morning. Lord Dufferin supposedly used the influence of his office to engage the British Secret Service, as well as its French counterpart, in an effort to determine just who the man was. However, that knowledge was never revealed. Cool story, right? Well, unfortunately for the tale, a French journalist named Paul Huzy decided to investigate this story. Before I get into his findings, I want to drop a couple of facts about this guy. He was kind of like a turn of the 20th century James Randi, who would go around exposing fake spiritualists and psychics and such. If you don't know who James Randi was, here's a quick bio. He was a stage magician who also debunked fraudulent psychics. He had a famous $1 million challenge in which he promised to pay that amount to anyone who could demonstrate true supernatural ability under controlled scientific conditions. These conditions would be criteria agreed to by both the investigators and the subject being tested. No one ever managed to claim the money. Hugh Z found that only one person had died in the hotel in an elevator accident, and that accident occurred in 1878. Furthermore, Melvin Harris, a BBC researcher, found that the story was just an urban legend, which Lord Dufferin evidently adopted as a personal anecdote. But hey, I'm not willing to let this go as a mere fib or an outright lie on the part of Lord Dufferin. I mean, I've been thinking about this thing for years. And the fucking book that I got the story from was entitled Strange But True, 22 Amazing Stories. Not Strange But False, 22 Misleading Stories. So maybe old Dufferin got the date wrong by 13 years. The passing of time makes memories and dates grow fuzzy, as I am finding out every day. Or maybe this story actually happened, but to someone else who then later related it to Lord Dufferin. And he enjoyed the bon mot so much and wanted to be a part of that story that he simply co-opted it, telling it as part of his own life experience. I don't know. Personally, I'm choosing to believe that it was his story and that it was 100% true and accurate. And while you're making up your own minds, let's pause a minute for a word about Anchor Podcasting. We're back, and I am not yet quite willing to stop dwelling on Lord Dufferin's narrative. More people than I have found this story thought-provoking. British author E.F. Benson published a short story entitled The Bus Conductor in 1906 that is an obvious reworking of Dufferin's tale. This fictional story tells of one man's explaining to a friend, at whose house he had been staying, how he heard a horse approaching during the previous night and opened a window to look outside to investigate. He saw a hearse pull up outside the building. The hearse was being driven by a man in a London bus conductor's uniform of the time. The driver looked up at the man, touched his hat, then jerked a thumb over his shoulder, saying, "Just room for one more inside, sir." The frightened man pulled his head back inside, closed the window, and turned on the light. 1 month later, the man was again visiting London and awaiting a bus outside of a subway station. The double-decker bus that pulled up was full, both inside and on top. However, its conductor made his way to the door, and he told the waiting man, "Just room for one inside, sir." The man noticed that the conductor was the same individual he had seen driving the hearse a month earlier, so he refused to board. The story ends with this. The bus pulled out from the pavement into the street in order to get around a van that was standing in front of it. At the moment, there came down King's Road a big motor going at a hideously dangerous pace. It crashed full into the bus, burrowing into it as a gimlet burrows into a board. He paused. "And that's my story," he said. A few years later, Bennett Cerf's 1944 Famous Ghost Stories evidently contains another version of the story. I read that one notable difference in this instance is that the story's protagonist is changed to a woman rather than a man. Unfortunately, I could not obtain a copy of the book to verify this. A year later, in 1945, Dead of Night, a British horror anthology film, was released containing The Hearse Driver, a segment based on E.F. Benson's short story. The Twilight Zone episode entitled 22, which originally aired on February 10, 1961, presents Rod Serling's take on Bennett Cerf's version of the legend. Then, in 1981, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, by Alvin Schwartz, contained a version of the tale entitled Room for One More. Another famous individual who had a run-in with an elevator was Edgar Casey. Just as with Lord Dufferin, I won't go too deeply into who Edgar Casey was, mostly because he would be an interesting topic for a later episode. And anyone listening to a podcast such as this has probably at least heard a little bit about him. Casey, also known as the Sleeping Prophet, was born in the year 1877 in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. According to the website edgarcasey.org, his psychic abilities began to appear as early as childhood. He was able to see and talk to his late grandfather's spirit, and often played with imaginary friends whom he said were spirits on the other side. He also displayed an uncanny ability to memorize the pages of a book simply by sleeping on it. Later in life, Casey would find that he had the ability to put himself into a sleep-like state by lying down on a couch, closing his eyes, and folding his hands over his stomach. In this state of relaxation and meditation, he was able to place his mind in contact with all time and space. The universal consciousness, also known as the superconscious mind. Edgar Casey died in 1945. Now, what I wanted to tell you about Edgar Casey is this. One day, I don't recall the date or if I ever even knew it, Casey was awaiting an elevator. When the elevator arrived and the door slid open, he was about to step inside, but before doing so, he happened to take a glance at the already ensconced passengers. It was then that he saw the aura of each passenger was black, which he knew was not a good thing. He declined to enter, so the door slid closed and the elevator continued on its downward journey. Almost immediately thereafter, the cable snapped and the elevator car plunged down its shaft, killing everyone aboard. So, did this really take place? I have to admit, I don't know. I searched the collective knowledge stored on the internet, but couldn't find any definitive proof. And since I didn't have a date, I couldn't look up any newspaper articles that might exist from around the time that would confirm or deny the story. So we have to take it at face value. The anecdote is definitely similar to Lord Dufferin's. Quite possibly someone accidentally or purposefully intertwined Dufferin's tale with Casey's in an attempt to add just one more miraculous event to the Sleeping Prophet's history? I don't know. But that's that. Just a little story that has periodically dredged itself up from my memory banks, most often when I'm about to enter an elevator myself. It also probably explains my preference for escalators over elevators. I do feel compelled to include this note hidden here at the end of this episode because, let's face it, most of the fucking listeners have probably dropped off by now, except for you hardcore fans. I have heard and read that Lord Dufferin was quite the storyteller, and his anecdotes couldn't always be believed. If you ever get a chance to take a look at Sobel's Strange But True 22 Amazing Stories, take a gander at Lord Dufferin's story and check out the ugly drawing of the guy carrying the coffin. It's not overly terrifying or odd or all that, but something about it certainly creeped me out as a kid. What Do You Think About is co-written by John Gordos and Jim Dumermuth. Our theme music, In Suspense, is provided by podsummit.com. Thanks to all you listeners. Please take the time to rate our podcast on your favorite listening platform. And go ahead and drop us a line at wdouta@gmail.com. Or visit our Facebook page, anchor.fm/wdouta, and leave us a message or check out the updates on releases. Copyright 2022 by John Gordos and Jim Dumermuth. As with my other solo episodes, this one has fallen short of the desired 30-minute, give or take a minute or five, duration that we shoot for. So I thought to myself, self, what are some other weird things about elevators? And lo and behold, my brain did drudge something up from its Sumerian depths. Have you ever heard of the elevator game? This was a thing back in the early 2000s, I think. Still might be, for all I know. But if you play this game correctly, you can, supposedly, open one of John Keel's window areas and transport yourself to a dimension different from that of our own. Here are the rules of the game. Select a building with at least 10 floors and with an elevator. Enter the elevator on the ground floor without any companions or co-travelers or friends or anyone. You have to do this alone. Press the button for the fourth floor. Once you arrive there and the door opens, do not exit. Rather, press the button for the second floor. Once you reach that destination, allow the door to open, but once again, don't exit. But this time, press the button for the sixth floor. Continue to follow this template while visiting the second, tenth, fifth, and first floors in that order. On the fifth floor, a woman may enter the elevator. If she does, do not acknowledge her presence in any way. If you do, she may attack you. All right. Now, once you've gone through all this button pushing and traveling to floors, one of two things might happen. After you've pressed the first floor button for the last move, the elevator may begin to travel upwards rather than downwards as it normally would when moving from the fifth to the first floor. Hooray for you! This means that you will be transported to another dimension. If the elevator returns to the first floor as it would normally after a passenger pushes the first floor button, the player must quickly exit the lift and get out of the building as quickly as possible without looking back for any reason whatsoever. Now, if you were one of the successful travelers and the elevator does travel upwards instead of downwards when you press the last button, it will stop at the top floor. When the doors open, the floor will have a gloomy, shadowed atmosphere with faint red light filtering in from any nearby windows. If you choose to exit and explore, just know that you may not be able to return. From what I've read online, the landscape, even though it's in this alternate universe's version of the building you're using, its interior landscape tends to change as you traverse it. Be sure to keep track of your steps and any turns you make, and maybe drop a bunch of breadcrumbs. Also, if the weird woman joined you when the elevator paused on the fifth floor, she may ask you, "Where are you going?" if you decide to step out of the car. Do not answer her under any circumstance. If you do make it back to the elevator, repeat the button pressing procedure I described earlier to return to your dimension. If the elevator tries to go up instead of down when you press the first floor button on your homeward journey, continue to press the first floor button until the elevator reverses and does, in fact, begin to descend. So why would anyone do this, you might ask, if you can get trapped in an alternate universe or attacked by a denizen of some ultra dimension or whatever? Well, to me, it just seems like an updated version of the old Mary Worth or Bloody Mary game that kids of my generation would play, where you go into a darkened bathroom and say, "I believe in Mary Worth, I believe in Mary Worth," 10 times, and then you say, "Who believes in that old hag?" And she reaches out and scratches your face or, you know, that kind of stuff. So why do you do it? You just do it for the kick, man. It is interesting that some people speculate that Elisa Lam was playing the elevator game before her disappearance. And who is Elisa Lam, you might ask? She's the young woman who was filmed some years back in the Cecil Hotel's elevator, acting strangely, before her disappearance and subsequent discovery dead in the hotel's rooftop water reservoir. I don't know if this is what she was doing. She definitely was acting weird in the elevator. and she was pressing buttons, but her button-pushing technique did not reflect the sequence as described in the rules I read above. Now, I haven't tried this myself, so I can't confirm or deny whether it works. If any of you have tried it, tell us about your experience by contacting us at wdouta@gmail.com.